Welcome to Transformation Nation with your hosts, Jason Krantz and Jordan Morrow. Whether in your personal life, family, career, or more, each of us has the power to transform. Our episodes are designed to help empower everyone to transform into the person that they want to be. Jump into this episode to learn how you can become who you want to become. Hey, everybody. How you doing? Jason Krantz here with my great friend, Jordan Morrow. Jordan, I got to make fun of you, buddy. Every time I look online, you're running a mountain or you're doing something like that. Like, just give us the debrief on your latest adventure.
Well, so you call it making fun of me. I just call it jealousy, Jason. That's all it is. You're just jealous that in my backyard, I have these. It's one of those things. Like last week, I took a day off of work to just mentally recharge. And I went and climbed one of my favorite peaks here. Just to get on top, put things in perspective. No, totally get it though. You're jealous.
A little bit jealous. But you know what the thing is that I am positive that when we are done with this conversation today, the person we have on is going to make you want to go climb a mountain. This is a guy that I have followed for a while now. And his story is one of those, it's genuinely going to give you goosebumps. Now, some quick background before I introduce him. This guy is ridiculous. His Humans 2.0 podcast is one of the most popular in the world. It's in the top 100 worldwide. It's absolutely ridiculous. Go listen to it. It's phenomenal. He has a new book out called Screw Being Shy, which talks about ways to address social anxiety and everything that goes around that. Very real for many of us. In addition to all of that, he's also recently launched a new business called Growcast that helps people launch their own podcast. And actually, fast fact, it's because of this guy that I actually reached out to Jordan about starting this podcast right here. So everything that we have, we owe really to this individual. So the name of today's inspiring guest is Mark Metry. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Jason, Jordan, thank you guys so much for having me. And man, I mean, the fact that, you know, you told me that I just sort of inspired both of you guys to do this. I mean, that's really what I'm trying to do. You know, like I wouldn't be on social media if I didn't talk about the things that I normally talk about. And when I look at my journey and I see the amazing people who are both online and then the amazing people in my life that inspired and influenced me, you know, it's like they push me and then now I'm out here doing the same thing. And, you know, it's really just like the butterfly effect. And I think that's how we change the world. So I think that's really evident. So yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you kind of talked about the idea of journey there. And, you know, in my mind, you are an example of what can happen when you commit yourself to change. But there's certain things that have to happen to invoke that change. So if you wouldn't mind, I know it's a loaded question, but can you give us some insight as to how you became the person you are today? And really, what did that journey look like from start to where we are today?
Yeah, so I'll get straight to it. So, you know, I'm 23 years old. My parents, they came to America and the East Coast, Boston, from Egypt a couple years before I was born. My parents came to this country with $200. I remember growing up on government housing, food stamps, you know, just like really having a humble beginning with my parents. And, you know, for me, at a time when I look back, that really, really just really changed my life. And I would say probably for the worse is, you know, I remember living in the inner city, and as my parents got bigger, better jobs, we moved out into kind of like a small town, a rural area in my state of Massachusetts. And this town had around like 5,000, 6,000 people in it. And so it was a super small town. And, you know, at this time in America, this was kind of post 9/11. And so if you were Middle Eastern, if you were Arab, this is really where sort of a lot of racism and discrimination happened. And so I just had these memories of, you know, me being a young kid and being in this environment where there was no racial diversity. Nobody looked like me whatsoever. I remember, you know, being judged for the first time because of where I was from, because of my skin color, being called, you know, all kinds of insults, you know, enduring, you know, bullying, abuse. And I remember when I experienced that, I didn't really know what was going on. But looking back at that today, it was almost as if like my mentality, my brain, like my brain's operating system, just like invisibly, silently just sort of slipped into this mentality of nobody likes you in the world, wherever you are, you know, don't try to speak up. Nobody really values you. And in turn, you know, I sort of became that kid like in the back of the classroom who didn't have any friends, who didn't talk to anybody. And so, yeah, you know, it's quite interesting. And, you know, I can go more into like, you know, social anxiety and shyness and all this stuff. But really for me, things began to change when I was about 18 years old, where I went off to college and I saw the sort of very real manifestations and long-term consequences of having social anxiety, but not addressing it. And, you know, these can be found in sort of the statistics, the data. But next thing I knew, I sort of found myself really abusing food, really abusing alcohol, some kinds of drugs, and really just trying to escape from myself, really being in a spot in my life where I just felt like I had no idea what to do. I had no idea. I didn't know who to ask, how to get help, any of that. And for me, I was just like, okay, let me try to escape from this pain. And, you know, eventually that led me to, you know, basically being like an insomniac, not being able to sleep, to eventually leading me to really like flirting and experimenting with suicide. And so, you know, I remember, you know, experiencing this when I was 18, about 5 years ago, as sort of like my rock bottom. And ever since then, you know, it's not like it's, you know, it was like an overnight journey. It's taken many mornings and nights and weeks and months and years as I have been sort of just redefining and finding myself, really focusing on my mental health, my physical health, my spirituality, my relationships, what gets me fulfilled in life. And, you know, in turn, I just really feel like I'm like an experimenter. I'm like a creator. You know, I'm doing these different podcasts. I'm making these books. I'm a part of different documentary series. I'm just really just trying to put this in many different ways as I can. And so, yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Can I ask a quick follow-up on that one real quick is, yeah, first off, you make me feel old when you say 23. But second, part of what you said there, so you were 18, what catalyst was it that got you starting to think differently, that started, because these are journeys, having studied mental health and issues like that, having had burnout myself, there are catalysts that move us. What was your catalyst that said at that young age, which to be able to figure this out at such a young age is unreal, and I love it.
Yeah.
But what catalyst did you have that said, it's time for me to shift things?
Yeah. That's a great question. So I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, I grew up and I remember having no money. I remember my parents, you know, like we grew up on food stamps, never really had any money to my own. But I remember when I was a young kid, like about 15, 16, I really sort of excelled on the internet. And long story short, when I was about 15, 16, I started my first six-figure business. And so, you know, I remember sort of being told like this American dream, this narrative of like, you know, once you, you know, do well in college and then you make like a six-figure salary at some corporation, then you'll be happy and you'll be successful. And, you know, I experienced that pretty early on. And so I think a lot of my pain and existential discomfort just came from sort of like this this sort of like weird distortion where I kind of felt like I was told a lie of like, hey, Mark, you know, do this, do that. But yet, you know, I was 16 years old and I sort of had achieved that level of success, but yet nothing in my life actually changed. I still thought of myself as the same old loser. And so I think when I was 18, and I went off to college, I just basically became hopeless. And I was like, okay, I did everything that society told me to do. And I feel like I'm broken. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm helpless. And so for me, it was just like, maybe it was even just like desperation. I think it was just an insane amount of pain that literally led me to just like realizing like, hey, Mark, if you don't like radically change your life around, you are going to be stuck, be depressed for the rest of your life. And the big thing about, you know, people who have social anxiety is, you know, if you don't experience this yourself on the outside, it may just sort of look harmless of like, oh, you know, he or she's a little bit shy, sure, or they're quiet or they're an introvert. But for people who really experience social anxiety, it's actually one of the most debilitating mental health problems, because it actually leads to your self-esteem. It begins to leak into so many other areas of your life, your relationships. And so, it can impact things like addiction to your mental health. And so I just feel like I reached a point where I just realized, like, if I continue walking this road, I'm going to be a statistic. And so that for me was the biggest thing. And like the big thing, again, I want to emphasize is like, I didn't really understand what I was doing, to be honest with you, back then in the moment. You know, like there's that quote that says, you can't see the picture when you're in the frame. Yeah. And so for me, it was just like very much just like taking one step, experimenting, taking one step, and then, you know, like reading a book and then talking to someone and then learning things, right? And so it was never like an overnight, you know, like some thunderbolt or like God came down and talked to me. But it was really just like me super desperate, you know, walking around at night, just like with my own mind, and basically just realizing like, hey, Mark, you've lived your life in sort of a mental prison for the last 10 years. We can't keep doing this. Mm-hmm. And so it was really just reaching a point of no end. And a lot of people, they look at my age and they're like, wow, you're 23. I can't believe you've realized this. And it's so weird because in some ways, I feel like I've lived two lives. You know, in some ways, I feel like when I look at who I was from ages 8 to 18, it almost feels like a movie. It almost feels like I was just so disassociated from that. And so I feel like I've really been able to exist with a lot of existential pain throughout my entire life that finally led me at a young age being like, okay, screw this. Like, I have to totally change the direction of where I'm going, because this is just going to get worse compared to people who I think, you know, obviously not compared to people who maybe had like an okay childhood, you know, maybe, you know, experienced some happiness, some great things that, you know, led them to maybe having a more balanced look. Whereas for me, it was just like negative led me to being like, I cannot keep doing this anymore. I cannot, like, there's no way I can keep going. And so that was it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, I got to ask is that, you know, at that age, you're figuring stuff out, you know, just personally, but your brain is still developing. And I know for me, like I used to be a pretty high level athlete. I used to do Division I athletics. I was always good at athletics. That was my differentiator. Mm. And then you start playing with world-class athletes and you realize you're not so good in the world scene. And I remember leaving sport and essentially leaving my identity behind. And that was a very significant challenge. And it's something, as I learned, a lot of athletes, Olympic athletes, professional athletes have very similar challenges. The thing is, it's really hard to get through that, and it's hard to do alone. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to get some help through the process. But what I want to get a little bit more detail on is, at that age, it's one thing to come up with kind of the realization. But the second part is, tell us more about the process you went through. I know you mentioned a little bit there, but to elaborate on that process, because it sounds easy. It's hard. It's very difficult. So tell us about that.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, it's something that I still think about today, because, you know, I think if we can understand the perception of many people's minds who struggle with this stuff, then those of us who have gotten on the other side, so to speak, can communicate more effectively to them. And so I always, always think about this even today. You know, I definitely had, you know, a few people in my life that definitely helped me out. You know, I remember listening to some podcasts at that time. I remember I had a best friend of mine who came and like stayed at my college dorm room, and he wouldn't leave until I saw him because he knew that something was up. And I had great parents and family members, and they would always try to talk to me. But honestly, you know, I think the biggest thing about that process, and I don't know if this is necessarily politically correct, but I think the reality is that nobody really helped me. And I think when nobody really helps you in your life, you truly get to a point, if you don't break, unfortunately, of I have to do this by myself because nobody's going to do this. Like, nobody's going to come and take my hand or take my brain or take my heart or take my health and walk me through what I need to do. And so for me, you know, it's weird because I, you know, would go for these walks in the middle of the night. in Boston. And basically what I would do is, you know, I remember I lived in this area where it was a pretty nice area, but sort of a few neighborhoods down, it wasn't the greatest place. It was a place in Boston that's pretty well known for like gang violence, for drugs. And so I would just go for walks in the middle of the night. And sometimes I'd listen to podcasts. Sometimes I listen to nothing. A lot of times I was just like, man, I really hope someone just walks up to me and kills me because I'm in so much pain and I don't really know how to deal with this. And so I remember on one of those nights I was walking and I experienced like a really emotional moment in my life. And it was an emotional moment that I had never experienced before, where it just felt like I had reached like a new emotional low, which then led me to reach a new emotional high. And ever since that moment, you know, I had this perspective shift where I just realized that things could change a little bit. And ever since that, really what I did was I basically, the best way to put this is I basically spent 6 months in the basement. I spent 6 months sort of in the cave of going in like by myself and just focusing on nothing but myself from a purely like productive standpoint of like really just looking at myself instead of sort of like some broken person or someone who sucks or someone who would never be able to change their life. I started looking at myself like a science project of starting to sort of realize, and I started to do research also at this time of different things about like nutrition, about your food, about, mm-hmm. you know, what is social anxiety? How does your brain create the reality that when you open your eyes, how does it do that? And so I literally just spent 6 months like in my college dorm room, just like hustling, but not anything regarding school or business, but just me and myself. And I made myself a top priority for probably the first time in my entire life. And as I began to do that, you know, I started to eat a little bit healthier and I discovered sort of the healing powers of nutrition, of how food doesn't just have to do with how much you weigh or whether you're obese or not. It actually forms the brain cells in your mind. And so I started to find these new tools to sort of revamp my mental health, from nutrition to then I started to read books and I started learning about like things like meditation. I started to exercise for the first time in my life. I started to like really talk to myself as if I was someone who was like my best friend, someone who I was really working with. And so, yeah, you know, I kind of spent like this very deliberate 6 months kind of in the cave, just like talking to almost nobody, sort of like disconnecting myself from the world so that I can sort of go back into my identity and really just realize that my identity is basically a story that my brain mm-hmm. has been telling me for years and years and years and years, that is reinforced by my psychology, by my environment, by the people that I hang out with. And so I just started to learn all these different things and I started to read books, apply habits. And I came out of that 6 months. Obviously, it's not like I, you know, totally became a different person, but in a lot of ways I really did. And I at least had sort of a foundation to then be able to go out in the world and then figure out how do I actually want to present myself. And then almost after I did that, that's when I started to tackle my social anxiety, my very mm-hmm. real fear that I had of just being myself, of talking to people. And so, yeah, it was like such a crazy process. There was all different seasons and it took months here, months doing this thing. I made so many mistakes. I continue to make mistakes, but yeah, it's really, I just sort of went in like sort of guerrilla warfare and just sort of grabbed it and went in. And I think the thrill of transformation and the different goals and how I was feeling and how I was sort of making myself feel good on a meaningful level in the first time in my life was just so motivating, you know, for me. And then eventually I started to connect with other people who were doing similar things. And so, yeah, I mean, it's such a like detailed process, but that's sort of how it went, or at least how I got started with it.
That is unbelievable, man. Because the thing is it was all like, I mean, I don't even know what to say. It's like homegrown, you know, because this process is difficult. I know a lot of people don't talk about this type of stuff, but the reality is, a lot of people can say that they haven't struggled with these types of things. The reality is, if you're human, chances are you have in some way, shape, or form. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. I would say it's a part of being human. But the question is, do you let things like that paralyze you? Or do you be proactive and do the things like you said, be willing to put in the work and like you said, experiment and learn and embrace that process? I mean, you know, Jordan, we talk about this all the time, the process of transformation itself. It's not easy. But if you're aspiring for that future state, that next tier, that better tier, you need to, you know, have a process and then embrace that process, go both good and bad.
People, like for me, we talk about it all the time. I love to climb mountains, run ultra marathons. And the question always comes, how in the world can you do that? Well, you just look at them in the face and say, you can do this. You maybe can't do it tomorrow. But I didn't start just one day and say, I'm going to get off my butt and stop lifting weights and go run an ultra marathon. That's not how this works. One of the things, though, I love that you said, Mark, was you basically led from curiosity. You started to create your own science experiment with yourself. So can I dig into that a little bit?
Yeah.
It's curiosity is something I talk about all the time. I tell people, be curious, ask questions, find something that interests you and dive in. When you started your own personal science experiment, if you will, how in the world did you even find things that interested you? How, just give our listeners some of these ideas, because for me, I know how I do it. I know how Jason and I talk, and if I have an idea how he does, what was your process to say, well, I'm going to look at nutrition and study this or that? What kind of things did you go through?
Yeah. So it's funny, right? Because when I experienced, you know, sort of what I call like being stuck inside of my own brain, having social anxiety, I actually had no idea. Like I had no idea. I just thought that like, I didn't know that social anxiety was a real thing. I didn't even know what anxiety was. I just thought that like, this is the way that God created me, basically. And so I remember the first time when I actually realized I had social anxiety was when I went to my first college party. And, you know, my parents told me to never do drugs or alcohol. And so I had never really touched any of that stuff. But when I went to college, I remember I went to my first college party and I got drunk. And I remember, you know, when I got drunk, all of a sudden, you know, I could walk up to anybody and talk to people with no problem, no anxiety. And I remember the day after just being like, wait, what the hell was that? Like, I've never been able to experience anything like that in my entire life. And so that for me was sort of like the contrast that then eventually finally led my mind to being like, oh my God, like this is happening for this reason. And so a lot of things just start to click in, and I actually realized that I had social anxiety. And so once I realized that, I remember, you know, I just started Googling. And you know, I remember coming across, you know, sort of social anxiety and alcohol. And it actually turns out, you know, a lot of people who struggle with, you know, alcohol addiction, the biggest percentage of people within that group are people who also face social anxiety, because alcohol is sort of one of the biggest, you know, coping mechanisms for people who have social anxiety, especially in social situations. And so I remember experiencing that for the first time and then just being like, Wait. So I just took like this liquid, this chemical, and I put it inside of myself. And next thing you know, that changed the chemicals in my brain to enable me to walk up to people and act in a way that I've never been able to act before. And so that for me was my first exposure to like, wait, if I just sort of like did something, you know, obviously something that's not that great, you know, drinking alcohol at a college party, to then being like, wait, if this exists, then I wonder, what are the other ways that I can sort of change my brain's chemicals? Because if I do that, then it changes who I am. Then it changes my behavior. It changes what I'm comfortable with. And so that was like my first exposure, like my first sort of biggest piece of awareness that was like, oh my God, like what if I could actually change this? What if this is something that is not sort of just fixed in into my character, into who I am as a person, but this just sort of happens to be, you know, maybe a consequence of the default life that I've been living for the last, you know, 18 years, because I didn't have the right information, because of my genetics, because of my trauma, so on and so forth. And so when I experienced that, that's what really sort of led my eyes into sort of, this is who I am. This is who I'm at a character level to, hey, maybe these things are sort of disconnected from my identity. Maybe these are just things that exist. Maybe I can change them. And so that for me was the biggest sort of empowering belief that I sort of randomly discovered. Because once you start looking at yourself from sort of like the science experiment, then a lot of the shame and the guilt that people have around transforming themselves, a lot of that starts to go away. Because a lot of people out there, you know, who are listening to this, and you, maybe you guys, myself, 100%, you know, we try to do these changes where it's like, maybe it's like, hey, I want to start eating healthier. Maybe I, you know, want to stop eating junk food, for example. And then you sort of, you don't eat junk food for like 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. And then your brain is like, oh, go eat some junk food. And then finally like 6 days pass and then you cave in and then you eat some junk food. And then you're eating the junk food and then you're like, oh man, I told myself I wasn't going to do this. And I literally suck at this, you know, like how can I not keep a promise to myself and all this stuff. And we bring ourselves down. And then next thing you know, we feel bad. And then we're like, hey, I want to feel good. What's the fastest way to do that? And then it's probably to, you know, eat junk again or drink some alcohol or whatever. And so I think like one of these things that I just sort of accidentally discovered was this process of just objectively looking at myself like a science experiment. Start doing that, it becomes sort of much more playful and much more lighthearted. And you're like, hey, let me try to change this. Okay, well, that didn't work. Okay, let me try to change this. Mm-hmm. And it really sort of becomes more playful. And so for me, you know, the first step of that was after I had sort of an emotional night like that I told you I was walking around Boston, I had this night where I remember crying and I remember running back home and looking at myself in the mirror. And at this time in my life, I was obese, I was overweight, and I remember looking at myself in the mirror and just being like, who is this? Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror and realizing that I was overweight for the first time in my life, having sort of a present moment clarity, mm-hmm. and just being like, Mark, you're pretty overweight. And so once I realized that, that is sort of like the first thing that I started learning of like, how do I lose weight? And I did my research and you know, that, you know, the health and wellness industry will tell you 10,000 different ways to lose weight. And some of them work, but some of them don't, and some of them are just, you know, out here for you to spend your money on like these random detoxes, mm-hmm. and crap. But eventually, you know, I discovered this company called Bulletproof.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very well known for like Bulletproof coffee. But basically the owner of that, the founder of that, Dave Asprey, who I've been able to have on my podcast twice now, I read his book. And that's really where I began to just get a completely different understanding of food, of like, you know, if you eat different foods, it activates different hormones. If you eat certain foods, your brain knows how to take that and use it better for sort of energy. And so I began to go with that diet, which is basically just like eating all natural foods, prioritizing on eating healthy fats, mm-hmm. that are good for your brain. And so I started doing that, and I really felt like my brain turned on for the first time in my life. And when my brain turned on for the first time in my life, all of a sudden it was kind of like, you know, I don't want to exaggerate this. And you know, keep in mind, I never ate healthy my entire life ever. And so all of a sudden it kind of felt like I was like the dude from like Limitless. Like all of a sudden, like I felt like my brain totally opened up. I was able to perceive things. I had way more energy. And as I got more energy, then you can do more things, right? Because I remember growing up and having these ideas of like, oh, hey, Mark, maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do that. But then I would get home and then I, you know, would sort of fall into anxiety, which totally zaps your energy, both your mental energy and also your physical energy. And then that energy that I had to potentially execute on that idea would never happen. And so that for me was sort of the biggest unlock of like really discovering my food and how it affected my mental health and how it affected my energy and my performance. And that for me was like the unlock, which then gave me the potential to be able to actually start reading books for the first time in my life, actually start exercising, mm-hmm. actually start implementing and doing things and being consistent. And once I did that, it was almost as if I felt like myself. Yeah. It was almost as if the person who I was becoming was not like some different person, but it was truly like the real version of myself yeah. that I almost felt like I lost touch with growing up and was sort of just suppressed or silenced for so many years. And so that was one of the biggest things.
You know, you bring up something that Jordan and I haven't talked a lot about on the podcast, but I am a huge believer in it. It's the power of food. The reason why is food has a cascading impact on hormones, insulin, cortisol, testosterone, and other things. You know, like I drink a lot of caffeine. And the impact that has on your adrenal glands and all the cascading hormone impact from that is quite profound. And, you know, I listen to Jocko, and Jocko's like, you know, I don't want to be a slave to caffeine. I don't want to have to need this thing to perform at a top level. And it's something so simple, but it's so hard. Like you talked about with weight loss, it's very simple really at its core, but it's actually very difficult. And it's the thing that I've observed is that the interrelatedness of all of this diet, sleep, exercise, mental well-being, especially with me as an entrepreneur, stress management and just resting and taking care of myself is my number one priority, because without that, you burn out, you get stressed out easier. Number one thing I've learned is that if I sleep enough, I tend to work out. When I work out, I eat better. When I eat better, I perform better, you know, all of these things. Another one just as tangential, but kind of related to what you're talking about, kind of on this theme is I've been doing intermittent fasting now for about a year and a half. And for years, my whole life, I've been consume, eating. Well, now it's, you know, I haven't eaten yet today and I feel totally fine, but it's the ways that, you know, at first, kind of, as you said, the first 2 days, the first week, whatever it is, it's hard. If you can kind of muscle through that, you can establish that new equilibrium. And I give the fasting example because the first 2 weeks of that was terrible. I was hungry. I was crabby. But I said, no, this is the time. I'm going to give it a real shot. And I'm going to see if this works for me. And it's like I set myself up knowing that this was going to not be fun. But if we get through 2 weeks – We're basically home free. And I'm glad I did it because, again, like I said, 18 months later, I'm doing it. It's my default operating procedure now, but it's had a very profound impact on my energy levels, my ability to focus, specifically weight loss, which has been an indirect benefit. You know, as you get older, it gets harder to lose weight. And so I just kind of go on that little monologue there because what you're talking about really resonates with me because, you know, it's the interconnected nature of all of these things. They don't function in just a silo, but bringing it back to your point on mental toughness, right? Mental strength, mental wherewithal to make these advances, because the types of changes we're talking about, that you're talking about, they're not easy. And if you're not at the top of your game, they become exponentially harder, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, what I would say too is, you know, my book, Screw Being Shy, you know, I mentioned a handful of studies that literally directly show eating junk food, not eating a healthy diet, is directly linked to having lower psychological resilience, is directly linked to increased psychological distress. And as an entrepreneur myself, and as you, the reality is that if you are not taking care of all aspects of your health, from what you said, like your gut microbiome, which partly actually controls your brain, which I can get into. Yeah. But if you're not able to do that, you just can't run a company.
Yep,
you know what I mean? Like it's extremely stressful, you know? And I did it when I was like 16, but I burned out. You know, I got depressed. I got suicidal. And so I'm grateful that I've been able to learn these things. And, you know, to be quite frank, I think the biggest obstacle that stops a lot of people from doing this is either – too much information or a lack of information. And what I mean by that is when I look at my health journey, I feel like I literally got so lucky. And the reason why I say that is because for the average person, for the average American, and I'm not like some health expert or anything, but for the average person out there, it is almost impossible for you to stand up to basically billion-dollar corporations and conglomerates who have hired the best food scientists, who have hired the best psychologists for marketers to basically put people in this toxic cycle where they are constantly consuming that stuff and it just brings them down. And so when you look at the stuff from how it affects your insulin, how it affects your blood glucose, to how it affects your gut microbiome, to how that affects your brain's neurotransmitters, to how that affects your mental health, it is really so hard for the average person who may not have looked into this stuff, for them to consciously be like, hey, I'm just going to eat healthier and actually be able to stick with it. And then on top of that, it's like, hey, you go on Google and you type in, how do I eat healthier? You're going to see, you know, 100 different things that you could do. You're going to see intermittent fasting. Then you're going to see, hey, you should eat 6 times a day. You're going to see, go plant-based. No, you should go keto. You should go carnivore. You should go this, you should go that. So the average person is like, you know what? What is all this stuff? Let me just keep doing what I'm doing. And so that, I think that is literally the biggest obstacle. And so what I think is, like, I think looking at the science, I think finding sort of a handful of, like, really trusty, credible people and looking at them, looking at how they've been able to sort of make sense of the actual science that's out there. And then just, like, sort of simplifying it. Like, I don't, you know, I don't think there's such thing as a universal healthy diet that works for everybody, but I definitely do think there are some universals of, like, people should not be eating artificial junk food. People should be sticking to sort of natural whole foods that, you know, God made, that wasn't made in a factory or wasn't made by a scientist. And again, like, I cite so many different studies in my book, from how this affects kids' behavior to how it affects brain development, to anxiety, to insomnia. And it's just like, this is, I personally believe that, you know, if every single person in the entire world is eating at least once a day, I genuinely believe this is one of the biggest problems, one of the biggest foundations that we can get out there, that we can tell people, that is going to incrementally change their lives. You may not change your life right away. You know, like, there's always, like you said, like, there's always, like, that 2 week period, like that 1 month period where if you're changing it, it's going to seem really difficult. I remember, you know, cutting off sugar and almost feeling like I was about to die. But it's just like, it's so important. And like, what I'll say too is, like, on my podcast, out of, like, the 300 plus guest leaders that I've been able to interview, all of the ones who I would say conscious and truly successful, all of them pay attention to what they put in their mouth, you know? And so it's just a trait that I have seen in leaders and people who are doing things at the highest level. And so I'm definitely going to learn from that, you know, so I can improve.
That's a great insight, because it is, it's fuel. It's the fuel that you put in your body. It's only, it enables you to do the things that you need to do. I mean, think about it. If you don't eat, you don't drink, you're not going to have the fuel, the raw materials you need to do the things that you need to do. To your point, I think it's so important for the reasons you mentioned. One topic that I personally feel passionately about, and it's beyond the bounds of this conversation, but I will mention it closely, is that, you know, we've got a health crisis, healthcare crisis, and you look at food. 100%. Food is a, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, I think it's fair to say it's a major driver of that. Obesity, heart disease, all those other things. And I am not a doctor, but when you read the content put out and studies done by people that are, it strongly suggests that that is in fact the case. So the things that you're mentioning are both individual but also societal topics that deserve our attention. And really quick, I want to talk about your book, Screw Being Shy. You know, like, I've been getting into it, and it is outstanding. And you've kind of given us a sense of where the inspiration for this come from. But, you know, kind of walk us through. Give us a bit more about it.
You know, for me, I know I'm going to write a lot of books throughout my lifetime. This is the first book that I've ever, you know, written. And I was kind of thinking about it, and I was actually, you know, making a book called Humans 2.0 about my podcast. And then I was making a different book that was about podcasting. But then, you know, for me, that what really led me to making my book was, so last year I did this tour where basically I traveled and I went to every major city in America and I spoke there. And one of the biggest things that I was just sort of stunned by is, you know, I would be speaking, I'd do my keynote, whatever, And then, you know, people would ask you questions and, you know, people would ask me different kinds of questions, but I noticed in every single city that I went to, the same kind of person almost would always walk up to me and ask me the same exact question. And it would be someone who, you know, maybe I would classify as, you know, being an introvert. They would walk up to me. They would sort of be looking down. They wouldn't make eye contact with me. You know, maybe they would stutter. I could tell they were maybe a little bit nervous. And they would ask me, you know, hey, Mark, how did you go from, you know, having social anxiety and not being able to speak to anybody to be able to, you know, speak on a stage in front of 100 people about your life story? And so I just got that question again and again and again and again and again. And I was just like, you know, like I have a lot of things to contribute to this world, but ultimately, you know, nobody who's listening to my podcast, nobody who's looking at what I'm doing is going to be able to do anything if they don't feel like they can be themselves. Yeah. And I've read so many books about social anxiety, about introversion, and I felt like I hadn't read a single book that talked about sort of the underlying issue, the root cause, how people can begin to look at this from multiple perspectives and really address this holistically rather than just like giving people one theory or one tactic. And so, yeah, that was my main motivation for writing this book, because like I said, I feel like I've lived in like this, this tunnel, this prison for 10 years. I know how terrible it is. I know how sort of invisible it makes someone feel. And I'm just extremely thankful that I got out of it. I'm extremely thankful that I got super lucky and I didn't become one out of the 850,000 people who commit suicide every single year. And so in a lot of ways, I just feel like, you know, part of this is my calling. And you know, a lot of people have read the book. I've gotten all kinds of feedback from it, from varying people of varying professions, from entrepreneurs to psychologists. And yeah, you know, I definitely think it's sort of the start of sort of the legacy that I'm trying to build. And yeah, I mean, it's super cool. I mean, I remember before COVID, like before everything shut down, I remember there were people telling me like, hey, yo, like I remember there's like this like 14-year-old girl who like DM'd me on Instagram and she was like, yo, I just checked out your book from my school library. and like just like seeing that effect. And then also hearing adults, you know, not even kids go through this. It's been really, really profound. And it's been one of the biggest messages because, you know, if you struggle with being yourself in front of anyone, in front of your family, in front of your friends, then you're going to struggle being yourself in front of yourself. And if you don't have that, that leads to so many mental health problems. And I truly think that this is one of the biggest sort of invisible problems in our society, because, you know, people who face this, they don't talk about it. And unfortunately, it may get that too late where they're either socially isolating themselves or they're addicted to alcohol or you know, eventually they commit suicide. And so this to me is just sort of like one step that I could have taken to maybe, you know, address people, to maybe like throw out a message for anyone who, you know, has reached a point to sort of that I reached when I was 18 of just like, yo, literally screw this. Like literally, if I'm not able to stand up for myself, then I'm literally going to be a statistic and not in a good way. And so I just made this book for people who are done, you know, and want to stand up and want to do something different. And they're just like, all right, screw it. Let's go.
No, I love it. Cause I got it. I'm not through it yet, but as I look at it, it's a great playbook. Like I'm fortunate in that in my life, I've always been an extrovert. So going up to people and talking, it's what I do. I draw energy from being around big groups and talking to people. Put me on a stage in a stadium full of people, I'm in heaven. So it's one of those, for me, I haven't had those struggles. However, there have been times where you do start to ask these questions of, you know, just you notice you change your personality for different types of people. And that can be extremely uncomfortable. So while I can't completely empathize, I can't completely relate through personal experience what you're talking about,
right,
I can certainly understand and empathize with it.
I just want to say something. You know, it's interesting because, you know, it's funny. So like I, now when I go up on stage, I think I would share your sentiment. It's like literally one of the best things, you know, for me to experience. It's so fun. It's so exhilarating. I think I'm a pretty social person. And this is the thing, that I know extroverts who have social anxiety.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the biggest things is just like realizing it. And people who are extroverts and have social anxiety, oh man, it's even worse for them. And I think to some degree, that's kind of like me. I think I'm half introvert, half extrovert. But I think like the biggest thing is like people who experience social anxiety due to usually an issue from them growing up, you know, it's almost really sort of like a nervous system, a problem like within their brain. And so there's a lot of people out there who are very social, who love talking to people, but their brain holds them back. And so like, that's one of the biggest things that I'm trying to address, because, you know, when I was doing my research for the book and I was talking with some friends, I had a lot of friends who told me like, hey, you know, I think I'm an extrovert. I put on this face of confidence, but really I feel like I'm faking. Really, I feel like deep down, I'm not my authentic self, and almost becomes like a mask. And so, yeah, you know, like this topic it's so complicated, yet it's so simple. But I think one of the biggest things is just like, this is a problem that a lot of individuals face, no matter how they look from the outside. Someone may just be better at sort of faking. I'm not saying that's what you're doing or anything that, but it's definitely a serious problem for sure. And it's quite interesting to think about and you know, sort of how this problem it just gets unaddressed because people can't see it physically with their own two eyes, unless it is sort of like, you know, that person looks like, you know, they're alone, they're shy, then that's more obvious to tell. So it's really interesting for sure, but I'm really glad you said that.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Because I think it highlights a nuance. Well,
and I think that's a great clarification point, because to your point, I know a lot of people that are people you'd never guess in a million years that these people had these types of thoughts or had these challenges or whatever it is on the outside, you look at it and you're like, there's no way. Then that's one of the things where, as I've gotten older, when I was younger, I never talked about any of this stuff with anybody. But as you get older and you get more maturity and you experience more, you realize kind of exactly to your point, these are very common topics, and to ignore them is quite ridiculous, I think. Now, some people would say, oh, it's weakness or whatever. I'd say, no, actually, I look at it as strength. The strength to acknowledge it and say, you know what? There might be something here. But more importantly, the fundamental theme of what we're doing here in this podcast is, I want to get better. How do I get better? And the first step of that is acknowledging that there's something there that needs improvement. And that's not necessarily negative. You know, I look at who I was 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. The only reason why I personally have progressed is because I had multiple occasions where I saw opportunities for improvement, and you experience things or whatever, but you make that commitment to trying to grow, to trying to learn, to trying to get better. And so that's why I think it's like a governor. People that have that mindset, I say you're limiting yourself, your mental, emotional, spiritual, physical, whatever it may be, development through this mindset. And you've got to expand your mind to be willing to acknowledge this. And some people just won't. That's their prerogative. But I think that's what, you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, no, I totally agree with what you said. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, just like realizing that, you know, like people don't get social anxiety, and it's sort of their fault, right? Like, they're usually kids, they experience different things. It's not your fault. But as you grow older, it's definitely 100% your responsibility. And unfortunately, this is one of those problems in life where if it's not dealt with, it actually, unfortunately, either stays the same or it gets worse. And so you definitely have to tackle it. And I'm glad you said your comment about, you know, people who may think that this is like a weakness. You know, to me, honestly, you know, if you think that, then I would say that's a weakness. Because if you are not able to, whether it's an organization or people that you love, if you're not able to come to the realization that not everybody's like you, that people's brains are different and there's different strengths and weaknesses in each person, then you're just not going to really be able to build a coherent team. And I think that's going to cause a lot of discrepancies. It's going to cause a lot of, you know, sort of people feeling like they're apart or they can't be like themselves. And so, I mean, like, yeah, I've had different conversations with this, you know, about different kinds of people, but ultimately, you know, I think sort of like in the 21st century, we just have to move away from this idea of that if someone speaks up about their mental health, then it's a weakness. Because the reality is that people all throughout history have always talked about or have always experienced this, but nobody really talked about it for cultural reasons, for maybe, you know, at the state of the world, you know, like if people are in a Great Depression or if there's a world war going on and there's governments that are dropping bombs on civilian cities, then yeah, probably nobody cares about mental health, you know, if we didn't value human life. And so I think sort of the tides have definitely changed. And I think the biggest thing is that if it's not dealt with, this is going to be even more of an issue. Mm. And you know, to your point before on sort of what you said about health, I mean, I was looking at you know, this, like what this doctor was saying a few days ago, and he was saying that, you know, 90% of people in America are considered unhealthy. And then if you look at, for example, what the CDC says in terms of COVID, they say that 95% of the people who make it, they don't have any metabolic issues. And the 5% of the people who do really suffer, they do have these problems. And so no matter what way you look at it, physical health, mental health, you know, the virus that's happening, the economy, I think all these things sort of tie in together, because at the end of the day, you know, we've all got a brain. And if you've got a brain, then you have mental health, the same way that if you have a body, you have physical health. And so I think a lot of it is sort of learning these new paradigms that are going to make us more cooperable with each other and more understanding. And I think if we can move towards that world, then we can really get into a spot where we're really using each other's strengths and weaknesses that maybe the world didn't recognize before as a way to collaborate and actually solve some of the biggest problems in history that our species has yet to solve today. And so I think, like, you know, for me as an entrepreneur, I also think about it from this perspective. And yeah, you know, out of all the books I could have written, this is one, because I think it relates to a lot of people who at least experience this issue. And it's like, you know, once you're able to do this, then, you know, if you want to start a podcast or if you want to start a business, it makes things much, much easier because you've done it inside, sort of in your real life first. And I think that's the most important.
Absolutely, man. You know, I wanted to cover one thing here real quick, which is, you know, your GrowCast, a new venture called GrowCast. Tell us more about that. The reason why I'm real curious to hear more about that is because, as I said, you inspired us to start this, and just tell us about it.
Yeah. So ever since, you know, my podcast started taking off, you know, on LinkedIn, I just started to get like a ton of different requests from different CEOs and leaders saying, like, you know, hey, Mark, great job. Can you help me start a podcast, or can you help get my company's podcast, you know, bigger, and so on and so forth. And so that's really what I was doing for like the last several years. And you know, I've had the privilege to work with all kinds of people, from professional athletes to Fortune 500 companies to people who have like massive like charities and nonprofits. And so for me, I actually use my podcast, to be honest with you, not even necessarily as like a marketing tool, but in terms of my journey, in terms of like my transformation journey, I've been using my podcast as my own personal development tool, where I can get access to so many people. And I've also been able to use it to also sort of like start a movement, speak up what I'm passionate about. And I sort of like had this moment with myself where I was like, you know, Mark, you're probably not going to be the next Gary Vee. You're probably not going to be the next Oprah. You're probably not going to be the next, you know, whatever it is, Will Smith. But I started thinking, and I'm like, you know what? What if I could, you know, empower the leaders as I have been, for them to start their own podcast, for them to start their own movements and use this tool the same way that I've been able to use it. And so GrowCast is sort of like a more, sort of like professional, sort of like legitimate, company that I've formed sort of from like the one-on-one work that I was doing. And it's really a way for like, whether you're a CEO or a creator who's passionate about some topic, or whether, you know, you're like some 16-year-old girl from Morocco who's like trying to change her life and nobody else around you is doing similar things, for you to start a topic, a podcast about a topic you're passionate about, so other people who are just like you can learn from you, but then also you get access to so many people and you grow your relationships, you personally learn. And so, yeah, you know, this is just sort of like the next step in my legacy. And yeah, you know, I hope to, you know, like, you know, eventually be able to help like, you know, 10,000 different people and companies start podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, when I look at the implications of that, I look at the influence just past me, but just being able to help another leader do that for their own business, for their own cause, that's like one of the most powerful things, you know, I can imagine doing with my skill set, particularly.
Yeah, absolutely. So, there's no question. You have the credentials. Like, it's not like, oh, maybe this will work. It's like, no, you have a worldwide top ranking podcast. You've talked to just the list of people you've talked to is incredible. And much like, you know, I kind of took that cue from you as, you know, Jordan and I were doing this podcast season one. It was great to talk about these topics near and dear to our heart, but really expanding the bounds of what we wanted to cover, which is growth and transformation, much like a diet. There's a bunch of different things that you ways that you can go about it, different perspectives. And that's where, as we looked at it, it's like the opportunity to talk to amazing people that have done amazing things with their lives. And how did you do it? You know, you might be the paleo and somebody else might be the intermittent fasting, but the right. common theme is getting in shape, feeling better, transforming yourself. And that's where, you know, we got that inspiration from you. So for anybody listening to this that is even hinted at or thought remotely about starting their own podcast, I would very strongly encourage you to go check out Growcast, because again, Mark knows his stuff and I'm getting paid nothing for this. It's just fact. The guy knows his stuff. He's got the credentials and go make that happen. So I wanted to ask you, if there's one piece of advice you could give our listeners, mm-hmm. what would it be?
Yeah. So what I would say is this. I would say one of the biggest things that I think really plagues people is their idea and belief around fear. And what I mean is, you know, when you look at fear, biochemically speaking, fear is basically your nervous system's way of telling you, don't do this, do this, don't do this, do this. And I think a lot of us get mixed up on that. And so three things that helped me around fear is, one is realizing that unless you are in mortal danger or, you know, experiencing trauma, fear is very much a compass that tells you what to do in your life. And so if you're afraid of doing something, and obviously as long as it's like not like a bad thing, and you're afraid of it, that is the world's, like your body's way of telling you, you should do that. And I don't think there's any coincidence that I literally spent my entire life not talking to people to, you know, becoming a public speaker and enjoying doing that. And so that's one. The second thing is you have to look at also fear from a biochemical perspective. And what I mean is a lot of people either experience fear or sort of experience exaggerated fear from their body that really, really harms them, really, really holds them. I think a lot of it has to do with their biochemistry. I think a lot of people haven't been able to make the connection of, hey, if your blood glucose level is increased because you just ate some junk food and then your blood glucose crashes, one of the natural metabolic effects is that your body triggers its emergency fight or flight systems, because it's like, hey, all of our fuel, all of our glucose is gone. And so that can sort of exacerbate and make your fear worse. And so you have to look at fear biochemically. And the last thing that I'll say is, if you've done those two things, the last thing on how to look at fear is you have to look at fear almost as if like it's like you're talking to like your little kid, like your child. And it's basically from the perspective of some people when they feel fear, they think it's like a terrible thing, or like they think that they're screwed. And a lot of the times that creates even more fear. But if you look at fear from the perspective of like, it's like you have like a 5-year-old son and he comes up to you and he's like, daddy, 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 daddy. And then you're like, hey, Trevor, let me finish my meeting, you know? And then he's like, no, daddy, I want to eat this. It's not like you would just like yell at your kid and be like, you know, shut up, you're terrible. Like, no, you would treat them like a kid, like a child that you love. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is also a really great narrative that has helped me around of like fear, and also a lot of my emotions too, of like, if you've been able to realize what these emotions like fear are, and they're sort of directive. It's your brain trying to tell mm-hmm. you something. And then two, looking at it from a biochemical perspective to lessen that impact, to help yourself biochemically. And then the third one is looking at it as if it's a friend of yours, a kid, these sort of emotions that sometimes don't want to leave us alone. And when you treat them like that, you accept them, and it makes things much softer, so to speak. And they are able, fear, these emotions, to almost sort of not mess with mm-hmm. you that much. And so that's what I would say, because I think fear is one of the biggest sort of things that stops people. And fear is something that can happen on the outside and also inside. Yeah. And so I think looking at it from that perspective can be really empowering. And, you know, next time you feel afraid, you should take that as like a motivation to do you and be yourself. But I know it's hard. I know it's hard for sure. But if you do those things, it'll sort of give you steps to gain more control around your fear.
You know, I love the idea that you just put forth there. I know for me personally, and Jordan had to hop off, but I know he would echo this, is that fear tells us that we are going in the right direction in general. We're expanding the bounds of where we are. You know, it could be taking on a new role, a new responsibility, doing anything new, having children, whatever it may be. But the funny thing is that it's fearful only for a little while. And once you get through it and you realize it's really not as bad as you thought, because the ideas we conjure up in our mind could be vastly worse than what the reality could be, you realize that it's not so bad. And then you've expanded your bounds. You've expanded those horizons. And once you've expanded, it's very difficult to go back. So I absolutely love that, my man. And then if people want to learn more about you, where should they go?
So the best spot is my website, markmetry.com. There's like a contact form. People can reach out to me. As you know, I'm very fond of LinkedIn. And so if people have LinkedIn or they have Instagram, to just add me, Mark Metry, shoot me a message, shoot me a personalized connection request. Let me know that you came from this podcast. And yeah, Jason, thank you so much for bringing me on. It's been an absolute honor, man. I'm glad we got to.
Yeah, likewise. This was everything I was hoping for and more. It's just you just distilled everything that I love about you and your perspective and experience into this talk here, and it's been incredibly powerful. So thank you for making the time for us. And to listeners, I hope that you got a ton out of this too. As always, if you enjoyed this, please leave us a comment, or more importantly, let the community know that you like this, either through LinkedIn or a review. And as always, make it a great day, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today on another episode of Transformation Nation. Please take the time to connect with both of us, reach out through our social channels, and start taking those first steps towards not only transforming yourself, but empowering everyone to become who they want to be. Until next time, this is Jason and Jordan. Go dominate, my friends.